Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, bumper packed episode today. Plenty to talk about, especially for those on Spotify and Apple. But how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good.
Busy week. It's really weird considering that there's not a whole lot of like incoming rumours flying around. There's still so much happening in the Villa sphere. And I think that's because we've kind of had this break. We've had this little rest. It's FA Cup weekend and stuff like that. So it just feels like things are really moving at a failed rate of knots. And although there's not been anything crazy, as I say, on the kind of incoming sprint, there's definitely a lot happening elsewhere, a few outgoings and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm excited to dive into this one with you, mate, because yeah, there's certainly a lot to talk about. Least of which is the small matter that we play Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in the FA Cup fourth round tomorrow. That's kind of a footnote in all of this, which is kind of crazy.
It is, mate. It is. And I think that ties in perfectly, really, with the first point with John Duran. What on earth is going on there? This situation seems to have escalated tenfold since the last time you and I were able to come and sit down and talk about this, mate, because there was this rumoured interest from Chelsea and it was kind of coming from maybe some publications that aren't as reliable, names which are slipping off, you know, the top of my head at the moment. But we sort of had it confirmed yesterday, didn't we, mate, by Matt Law, who, for those of you who don't know, Matt works for The Independent. Matt is a Villa fan, but Matt covers Chelsea predominantly for The Independent. So I feel like that's as solid a link as you're going to get, right? You've got somebody who's very in the know when it comes to both camps, both on and off the field. And, you know, he's reported that Chelsea do have interest in bringing in John Duran. And it seems like all of this sort of sits on Armando Broja's shoulders, really, and their plans with him. And I think what is... the math doesn't math, right? Because if you're looking at both players right now, being completely objective, Armando Broja, you know, like you said the other day, mate, is right now a far better proposition than John Duran is right now. So why would they even contemplate selling one to bring in the other? Obviously, you know, financial fair play is looming over everybody's head, it seems. I feel like we're only 1 week away from something coming out of Villa. Aston Villa being under investigation for financial fair play, but it's one of them, isn't it? And I can't get my head around. I mean, I can and I can't, right? Because, you know, and we even said this the other week, didn't we, mate? Chelsea are going to want 40-50 mil for Broja, right? And that's going to be pure profit because he is obviously a part of their setup at Cobham. That's 100% pure profit in terms of how that looks on the balance sheet, which is obviously an understandable reason why you would sell Armando Broja. But bringing in John Duran, and like, this isn't to sort of beat up on John Duran at all, because, you know, if you're new to the podcast, you know, it has to be stated on the record that I am a big admirer of John Duran and I think there is a future there. This kind of crazy transfer just doesn't really seem real. Doesn't this feel like a bit of a Football Manager move? And like, it's not the first time we've said that with Todd Boehly transfers, is it, mate?
Well, this is really an interesting one. I think it's Villa are kind of hamstrung by the market that we're in, right? And that we're in January. It's very difficult to go out and buy a striker. If Chelsea match or offer us more than we originally bought John Duran for, we actually bought him for a little less than I thought, according to Transfermarkt. The Transfermarkt have it in around 17 million euro. I had in my head it was just over 20 million pounds. But either way, it's kind of in that benchmark. If Chelsea did come back and say, yeah, we'll give you 25, I think you have him in the next taxi down to London. I really do, because I think it's a chance to, as you say, get some profit in. It's a chance to capitalize on, I think, as you rightly say, the jury, I don't know if it's hard to say the jury's still kind of out on John Duran, but the jury's definitely still out on whether he's happy at the football club, which kind of supersedes everything. It doesn't matter how good this kid is. Like, if he's not happy, if there is a little bit of unrest, if some of the rumours, and they are rumours, that, you know, he's been a bit disgruntled, that there's been occasionally some words with Unai about his playing time and everything like that. If that is genuinely the case, then if Chelsea come in and offer you more than you originally paid for him just 12 months ago, I think you sell. I really do. But the problem that that creates then for Villa is that we have to scramble around with less than a week left on the market to buy a striker, and we would have to do that. I think the sole reason that we're so keen to keep hold of John Duran, which is something that Unai has already insisted the club are keen to do. We've already rebuffed one loan move from West Ham, it seems. So we're definitely keen to keep hold of John Duran. And that's because if Ollie Watkins does get injured, who fills his shoes? Who plays up front? And it's not just a case of, oh, like, who's the next best? It's we don't have another option. And it's as simple as that. And so if we were like let go of John Duran, not only would we have, you know, 4 or 5 days by the time the transfer goes through to find a replacement, but we'd also have to find a replacement, A, in the January market and in a market that knows we just received, you know, £25-30 million for a striker of our own, on top of the fact that we're already a Premier League club. FFP is a really interesting one. I definitely do think that player revenue is going to be a huge source of our income. You know, we had all of the financial records and stuff like that published the other day. Deloitte did their study and stuff like that. And you look at something like match day revenue for Villa, which is down at just £16 million. For context, Man United, £136 million, Spurs, £106 million, West Ham, £41 million, Chelsea, £69 million, Man City, £72 million, Liverpool, £81 million. You know, even Leicester made £21 million in match day revenue last season and they got relegated. It just goes to show that it's these kind of initiatives that, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but like the lower grounds and everything like that, when you paint this picture of what the club is bringing in outside of the footballing sphere, it's not a fat lot. It's not a fat lot. And so we really need to make that up in other areas, and player sales is going to be a big part of that. That's why Cam Archer and JPB and all these kind of guys, they're not on loans, they're on these permanent deals. And I think it's to try and make up for what we're losing in other areas of the football club. So again, I think if someone does put 25 million on the line for John Duran, I do think you take it. It's just how confident the club are of finding a replacement. I was kind of considering it the other day. I was like, it's crazy, but how much is that buyback clause for someone like Cameron Archer? Can you, if you can activate that and bring him in for less than John Duran, like, do you consider that? I don't know, but it's crazy that what kind of Chelsea are willing to pay that much for someone that's as raw as John Duran is, and he is really raw. But at the same time, as you rightly say, but considering their transfer strategy, I'm not all too surprised, which is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing is here, you have to consider it if there is genuine potential, given Chelsea's track record of overspending. You've said 25. You could potentially even get 30. Mm-hmm. Just with, like, these guys seemingly don't know how to negotiate. So it's one of them where I guess nothing is really off the table, right? And it's an interesting point you make about Cam, because I feel like I read that there is a mandatory buyback of 18, maybe 16 million. Whatever it was 2 million less than what we sold him for. Should Sheffield United get relegated, which, looking at the table as it stands now, it looks very probable. So it's one of them, like, we may be forced to buy a striker in the summer anyway. Mm. So it's a crazy situation. It's crazy how it's evolved, how it's going to evolve as well. And I think this potentially holds up like the Morgan Rogers deal as well, because, you know, we've sort of clapped back with this third bid and Borough seemingly want more money. We're talking 10, 12 million pounds now. And as you rightly said, mate, when teams know you've got money, all of a sudden players come a bit more expensive. And as infuriating as that is, that's just the reality of the situation. I tried a similar tactic in Monopoly the other day. I bought everyone's final card up that they needed, and I tried to charge people an exuberant amount of money to purchase said cards off me, and it massively backfired. So hopefully, yeah, take note, Hillsborough. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You will get absolutely fisted like I did in Monopoly. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of analysis you guys come to the Villa Filler for. So yeah, Monopoly updates the lot. And I think it's kind of, you know, we didn't sort of set this as the agenda, mate. I'm springing this on you right now. Duran goes, right? Do you go and sign another player, not of that mold, but of that profile? Do you go and get somebody for relatively cheap who you can sort of polish up and build into your perfect striker? Because I think we're looking at the right back whose name I've already forgotten because he's gone back on loan to Red Star that we've signed. We're looking at Rodgers. The strategy, as we alluded to the other day, has sort of pivoted, and I think that is partially due to the financial situations and strengths that I guess we find ourselves in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is the thing, as you rightly say, with the Premier League club, it's just so much harder. I mean, I had to kind of, almost double take the other day on social. There was a loan move, Borja Iglesias, went from Real Betis to Leverkusen on loan with a permanent option. I think it was which is a crazy deal, for an 8 million clause, which is not even mandatory. It's a £1 million loan fee and an €8 million clause. So what is that, £6-7 million? This is someone, Real Betis joining a club that's top of the Bundesliga, 174 goals, 23 assists in 480 in club games. Real Betis, I think a few seasons ago, albeit I know he's 31, bought him for around €30 million, letting him go for about €8 million. There's no way, if that's a Premier League club, it's that cheap. There's just no way. And so you always see these deals on the continent and you think, oh, so there is value in the January transfer market, but it's just so much more difficult in reality than that. And I think when you look at kind of the deals that we've done previously in the January transfer window, even, since we got promoted to the Premier League, you look at someone like Borja Bastón or Danny Drinkwater or something like that, clubs do panic and they are forced into these kind of low budget, really bizarre transfer deals, just trying to get someone through the door. And I think I was kind of saying this to a friend the other day. I was like, I am surprised we haven't done more January business than we have, considering the position that we're in the table. It's kind of like we've got not quite once in a lifetime, but definitely kind of once in a, the first time this millennium, we're in a real Champions League fight. And I don't mean that we're sick with the potential to pump up, but like we're here, we're in the Champions League spots with however many games to go. Is it worth a 20, 30 million pound roll of the dice, a couple of buys, maybe one or two real bits of quality to try and push you over the line? But I think given how hard the Premier League have come down on clubs like Everton, like Nottingham Forest, on financial fair play, it's been a really quiet transfer window for the Premier League as a whole this January. There's not been many deals going on. I think that is probably down to the fact that the league is just scared right now. The league has seen kind of the points deductions are where it really hits the clubs, and no club will want that. And I can't imagine a way with even like Jack Sale, and I know guys like Carney and JPB and Cal Archer and stuff like that, those pure profit sales that will be balancing the books, given how aggressively we spent, particularly our first two seasons, like coming back up to the Premier League, and that we're not generating much money elsewhere. It kind of makes sense. And I don't know how hamstrung the club is financially, but we'll just kind of have to see. It's going to be an interesting one. I don't think we will sell John Duran, but Chelsea are still serious and they're sniffing around him in the summer. Then I think that's a completely different proposition.
100%, mate, 100%. And I would implore anyone who wants to understand Villa's financial outlay more to check out Up the Villa podcast. Luke did a really good episode with Kieran Maguire, whose book I have read more times than I can count. And I can't read it anymore because it gives me dissertation PTSD. I almost said PSD then. It's not a bloody Photoshop file, is it? But no, Kieran Maguire is like the GOAT when it comes to football finance. And Luke did a really, really good interview with him the other day. So I think it will sort of provide a lot of context to, the kind of decisions you alluded to earlier, mate, in terms of lower grounds, new stadium, all those ugly, horrible things that we don't like and we don't like talking about, but have to sometimes. There's a very interesting perspective there. Very interesting perspective. In terms of balancing books, mate, and I think balancing squads as well, because, we've been saying this for a while, a fully fit squad that we have, when we have everybody back, I think we probably have one or two players that too many. I don't think Unai really likes having massive squads. And in probably what I would can only describe as the strangest transfer of the January window, it appears that Leander Dendonca is a Napoli player right now. And if that doesn't describe the state of affairs that Napoli are in right now, then I don't know what does. And there is no disrespect intended at all to Leander Dendonca. He is a man who is good at what he does and does what he's good at. Do you know what I mean? There's no there's no flash play. There's the, you know, he's not trying. He doesn't try and do things he isn't capable of. He's just this gangly guy who goes around putting out fires in the midfield. And I've got a lot of respect for players like that. But this has to be the most mediocre transfer Napoli could have made in the entire window. We're talking about a loan with an option to buy for 7 million euros at the end. No, I said option, not obligation. And like, what are they smoking over there? Honestly, what are they? Like, they've been so mid this season, mate. They have been so painfully mid. And this is a team that won the Scudetto last season by, I believe it was 16 points. They were 16 points clear at the end of the season. And they have, I don't want to say slummed to a point where they're looking to sign Dendonca to shore up their midfield, because again, I don't mean to disrespect him at all, but it just doesn't scream Scudetto.
No. I think this is good business. Apparently there's an option to buy Leander at the end of this short term loan at the end of the season for around 10 million euro, which I actually think is really good business by us, to be fair. Like, if we can get him off the books, if they do activate that, then that's only around 5 million euro than what we paid for him originally from Wolves. And that was someone that was playing quite a lot of football for Wolves. I think for him, it's worth mentioning that he is 28 years old. You know, he's not kind of in his 30s or anything like that. He's a very good age, particularly for the kind of profile and where he plays. I think the defensive midfielders coming up to their late 20s and early 30s, you're going to get a lot of good football out of Leander Dendonca. But considering that his stock will have dropped dramatically over the time that he's been at Villa, he's not played a lot of football for us at all. And then it's interesting that we're still able to like get that kind of money out of it. I mean, he's only made 36 appearances for Villa since he came. And whilst that doesn't sound too bad, however, like, so many of those are substitute appearances, and he's never really kind of found his feet at the club. And it's been clear for a little while that we were open to a move there. It's interesting that it's kind of come now and not like in the summer, because he's actually played, as we got through the Christmas period particularly, obviously kind of had peaks with that old away goal at Old Trafford, played quite a bit of football recently, and in some quite important games as well. You think, you know, he played quite a fair bit of the second half in that home win against Arsenal. It suddenly started to feel that he was really coming out of the woodwork to play, I'm not going to say a prominent role, but definitely a significantly increased role to what he had kind of just a couple of months earlier. It seems that Unai's got real faith in Tim Ireburdum, which is not surprises me, but not in a way that is disrespectful to Tim's ability, just in terms of it kind of felt that Tim's moment may have passed him by a little bit. It kind of felt that his stock was really high prior to that loan at QPR. He didn't have a great time there. There was obviously that kind of, I think he played a game without completing a pass or something like that, and it kind of came back on loan, and he just seemed really on the periphery of the first team squad. But it's interesting to learn that Unai rates him really highly and that he's going to trust him to play Leander's role at the club, which, if anything like the last few months is to go by, and considering that, you know, European football will return in a month or two, that could be quite a lot of football for Tim.
It could, mate. It could. I think, and like, you know, kind of to circle back to my point earlier, it's a young player who and I can mould in the way he wants. You know, he's clearly a player with bags of potential, bags of ability, and it's just about nurturing that and really getting the best out of him. But I mean, it felt like for at least 12 hours that the Dendonca hole that is left in the squad was going to be filled by Florian Niehaus of Borussia Mönchengladbach. Try saying that three times over. But it, you know, Fabrizio has kind of said that we've not made an offer. We've not, you know, the loan hasn't been discussed, which was very different to what was initially being reported a few days ago. We're going to talk about it nevertheless, because this is a signing that I can get behind 100%. 100%. Big fan of Florian Neuhaus. Big fan of the Bundesliga, as you guys know. And in terms of profile, in terms of ability, in terms of just general play, it's nothing like Leander Ndonka. I think, you know, to sort of compare him to a player in the Villa squad, he is probably closer in style, not necessarily ability, to a Douglas Luiz rather than a Leander Ndonka, which is interesting because, as you say, mate, we're kind of looking for that. You can call it Ndonka replacement if you like. You can call it Kamara backup if you like. You know, you tag that however you will. But Neuhaus is someone who's just really comfortable in transition. So far this season in the Bundesliga, he's scored 3 goals in 15 appearances from an expected goals tally of 1.7. I'm a big fan of this guy, and maybe there's a slight bias because he was a part of a very successful Football Manager save that I had, but rest assured, I have seen this guy play plenty of times, and it feels low risk. One, because it's not actually happening, apparently, but two, you know, we were discussing it as a loan with an option to buy again, sort of try before you buy, see how it goes. You know, he's receiving 3.54 progressive passes per 90, 82.5% pass completion rate. He's averaging about, you know, 43 passes per game, you know, pretty standard for a midfielder, averaging 5.17 progressive passes per game. Always looking to receive the ball on the front foot, continue to get that ball forward. A player who, again, as I say, glides in transition, has a bit of an eye for goal as well. This is getting my endorsement, mate. You know, we've said recently about us sort of repping Villa players that have ended up being quite bad. This is a hill that I am willing to die on. Florian Neuhaus, get him in. This isn't Bjarnason. This isn't Wesley. This isn't Keenan Davis even. This is where the tide turns, mate. This is a guy who I can rep with my chest.
Mate, honestly, I would begrudge to add even too many more words there. Like, that is a fantastic summary there. I can add not much more than what you just said. Yeah, I think he's a really interesting player. It's interesting that he's thrived in quite a few different positions as well under different managers. You know, you look at what they're doing at the moment, and it's very different to what they were doing. And someone like Daniel Farke was different to Adi Hütter or Marco Rosa. They're playing, he's been very consistent in a lot of different roles under a lot of different managers, which is usually a good sign. It's interesting to see, yeah, loans is probably the way that this will go. If Villa do anything in this window, it seems that loans like could be an interesting way to kind of circumvent those FFP, like SFP regulations that I was just talking about. So I think that side of it does make sense. It's an interesting profile, and I think he would come in. And, you know, with Ndonka, I say, if it is Tim to step up, those are some big boots to fill. I still believe that maybe there are some other bigger holes in the squad to fill. But yeah, let's see, mate. Let's see.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And, you know, this is a guy who's played in different systems as well, as you alluded to, mate. I think Gladbach this season have quite often played a back five. So he's sort of been in a midfield three, midfield two at times as well. So it's good to know that he's got that sort of tactical flexibility. And if you actually look at FBref's player comparison, the top player on that list, mate, is none other than John McGinn. Very interesting. Definitely doesn't have a back quite as big as Guinea's, but it'll
do. Who does exactly?
I mean, we shouldn't hold people such an impossible standard, mate. You know, this unattainable beauty, it's not fair to everybody else, is it? But speaking of things that are unattainable, things that feel unattainable, mate, trophies at the moment. Well, maybe not so, but that was my segue into talking about this Chelsea game. And maybe there's going to be a little bit of an edge to this, given the sort of Duran links and all this sort of stuff we spoke about. We've won our last two away games at Stamford Bridge as well in the Premier League. I've got a really good feeling about this, mate. This is the time. You know, we're going to advance in a cup competition. 6,000 Villa fans descending to the capital to go and watch another Unai Emery masterclass. And I'm not worried. I'm not worried about their 6-1 win against Middlesbrough, because, you know, I think we all kind of knew how that tie would play out over two legs. That's exactly how anybody could have called it. Borough, you know, making miracles happen in the home leg, and then ultimately Chelsea, you know, finally reacting and putting them in their place in that second game. The only sort of thing I would like to take from that is like Morgan Rodgers, because, you know, what a goal he scored, by the way. Middlesbrough's only goal in that second leg at Stamford Bridge. And it looked like he was talking to close friend and England international Cole Palmer after the game as well. And a lot of people are sort of speculating, saying, "Ah, oh, you know, see you again on Friday." There's so many little sort of dynamics and story arcs as we sort of lead into this game, mate. It's just really important that we give a cup a good go, mate, isn't it? Because we're out of the Carabao. This is a really good chance to advance to the later rounds of the FA Cup, get us into the fifth round. And yeah, it's going to potentially cause fixture congestion, pile up, tired legs eventually. But, like, you know, you don't know when you're going to win a trophy. So, but right now, with the moment that we're in, with just how well we're doing in general, for me, it would be stupid for us not to just give this everything we've got, right?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. We're here. We're in a good spot. Chelsea, I think the result the other day has perhaps put a little bit more fear into people's minds than maybe they did when the draw was made. As you rightly say, we've won our last two games against Chelsea, both of those coming at Stamford Bridge. We're in a really good run. But there is still the FA Cup monkey to really get off our backs. I mean, we squeezed through the third round by the skin of our teeth. Obviously, that deflected Matty Cash goal against Borough, putting us through into the fourth round. Out the hat come Chelsea, who we haven't played in the FA Cup since a 3-0 defeat in the 2009-10 semi-final at Wembley. In a similar kind of vein, we've not won an away FA Cup tie against another Premier League team since the turn of the century. You're going all the way back to the quarterfinal of the 1992-2000 season, where we got a win at Goodison Park. So there's still plenty of skeletons that Unai's got to clear out of the closet. It feels like with every passing game, there's some crazy record. There's even more here. We haven't won three in a row against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge since a run between January 1959 and 1960. As I said, it feels like with every passing game, we're tearing up records from 50, 75, even 100 years ago. Some of them we've never even done before. So yeah, there's still that kind of thing. I think I'm hoping that we look a bit, well, to be honest with you, Dan, I'm hoping that we look a lot better value for a break than we did, because I was kind of looking back the other day and like, I don't think we've really played, when I say well, I mean to the best of our ability since that week where we beat City and Arsenal. So if you look at our results since then, you had the draw against Zirinski, a win 2-1 away at Brentford. And, you know, we got that and we got a massive win there. And that's a massive win. But we definitely weren't our best in that game. Come back for the draw at home against Sheffield United. We obviously played really well in the first half of the Boxing Day fixture against United, but we know how that ended. A 3-2 home win against Burnley. And then you have that win in the Cup against Borough before that 0-0 out at Goodison Park. So since then, whilst we've been able to get the job done where we really needed to, it's not been as free-flowing, it's not been as easy as it has been previously, and we are in no position to complain. But I think you look at how all of a sudden Arsenal just exploded out of the traps again in that game against Palace the other weekend, you know, with a 5-0 win. They torched them, and before that, it looked like Arsenal couldn't hit a barn door. They were screaming for a goal threat. All of a sudden, they have a couple of weeks off, they come back, and in their first home game, they put 5 goals past Crystal Palace. You're kind of hoping that a break, particularly given the run of fixtures that we have, you know, we've got Chelsea away, at home against Newcastle, we're then on the road, Sheffield United at Bramall Lane, which, you know, we just, from that list of results that I just reeled out, we know that that won't be easy, before another home game against Man United. So we're going to a run at least of 4 games now. It's going to be really tricky, and we've just got to hope that this rest, this 2 weeks that we've had, have done the boys some good.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. They should look a lot better for it. And it does feel like a long time since that Everton game. So hopefully they're well rested and they're feeling up for it. I'm going to give you my score prediction, mate. I'm going to give you time. I'm going to go with a 2-0 Villa win. And I'm going to say Leon Bailey, I'm feeling good about him right now. Leon Bailey goal, John McGinn goal. I'd absolutely take that, mate. I think we're more than capable of doing these guys. They're so painfully average. And I hope that doesn't come to bite me in the arse when we talk about this potentially on Saturday. But yeah.
Yeah. Whilst this would be probably the worst outcome imaginable, I think this will go to replay. That would be a disaster.
Is it replay or penalties in the FA Cup? It's replay, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I think it still is, at least at this point. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if we see these boys back at Villa Park. And as I said, that is the worst possible outcome, isn't it? Nobody would want that match. But I don't see this being as easy as our last two trips to Stamford Bridge, put it that way. I do think Chelsea will put up a bit of a sterner test, as you right. I still don't think they're the full package, far from it. But it's, I don't know. There is, I think this will be a little bit harder. I think the fact that it is a cup game actually makes that a little bit harder. I think they're more inclined to come out and go for it. I think that kind of the nature of the game, the win or go home, or replay, I should say, kind of football that this presents, kind of favours Chelsea in this game, because I think they'll come out to be out and be a little bit braver and a little bit bolder. I think the pressure of their league situation kind of weighs on them when they play Stamford Bridge. So yeah, I hope I'm wrong. I'm quietly confident. I don't think we're going to lose, but it wouldn't surprise me if we ended up back at Villa Park.
No, I mean, hopefully not, mate, but you never know. And before we go, mate, you had some quotes from Little Emmy, didn't you, mate? Gwendier's been doing some chatting.
He has, man. And it's been nice. So he's done an interview with Ravella that I just wanted to run through, because there were some really nice quotes. I've got a shout out for the report for digging these out. Kind of talking about his injury. He says that, you know, he goes to every single home game. He's still in the dressing room before and after games. There's a quote particularly that stood out, and he was like, there are times when I wonder how I would be now if I didn't have the injury. Looking at the situation of the team and how they are, I would love to be on the pitch of them suffering, running and enjoying. When the extent of the injury was known, Emery called me. He told me to be calm, that it was the best time for me to recover in the best possible way and to enjoy the time with family, that I could tell him anything that I would tell him. Almost every day he asked me about my evolution, how I feel and how I am psychologically. And I just thought it was really nice. I honestly, like, it must be really difficult, probably more so for Ty, given how long he's been with us and like how bad the like situations have been in Ty's kind of whole tenure with the club. But those little quotes from LME did warm my heart, and it's nice to see that he's still in around the lads and everything like that. And I just thought that, yeah, it was a nice note to end the pod on, really, mate, because that's some wholesome stuff right there.
Absolutely, absolutely. He was in great spirits when I saw him after the Sheffield United game as well. You know, he was feeling positive about that injury. So I love that. I love Emi. And I think, you know, I've said that, how many times have I said this, mate? We really miss that energy. Like, and it's going to take a little while for him to get back up to speed. But I'm welcoming the day that Emi Buendia graces the hallowed turf at Villa Park once again. But guys, let us know your thoughts on everything we discussed in the comment section down below. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, make sure you follow, download, share the podcast with your friends. It helps us out more than you guys know. So yeah, like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.